the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Charanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Charanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridayaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassion and aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. By compassionate mindfulness that proves this path. By compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sadha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Thank you.
We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Like to look at.
I was just going to do the reminder that we record the recordings and make them available to monthly donors.
Okay. Benny.
I was just watching an interesting process during sitting, and a couple things I've been seeing. One is how utterly unhelpful assumptions are. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, just recently, in a number of situations, I've watched this whole structure get built, and it turns out that it's incorrect, and has nothing to do with what's actually true. And what I've seen is that the foundation stone is an assumption, And the other thing I've seen about that is that the structure that gets built is already built. It just gets laid on. It's the same old structure. And usually what it involves is assumptions, often around some sort of grievance. And so the structure contains all the grievances.
Yes.
You know, the history of grievances that is immediately laid on. So that's just, just seeing the power of a belief or an assumption to generate this process of the structure being laid on, and how absolutely inaccurate it always is.
Well, and so let me just reflect that the foundation of the structure is an assumption, and the interesting part of the structure is that it contains the entire story. And so if I'm understanding you, what you're watching is how something happens as a consequence of the assumption getting made, and the structure gets laid on top of it, and it contains all the, it's I think what we were looking at, sometimes Sherry talks about it, right, when the attention goes, the attention is here, there's nothing between us and life. Mm-hmm. As soon as the attention goes into conditioned mind, the entire reality shows up, and there's a familiarity about the reality because it is its reality,
right,
perfectly tailor-made to this person's karmic orientation,
right.
And then it just comes into being.
And then that's the world I step into.
Yes.
So during the sit, kind of a related thing, I was watching beliefs and assumptions and the things arise, and then noticing that, and then.
So noticing the process.
Not noticing that those things were arising.
Uh huh.
And then, conditioning jumping in to become who was noticing.
Uh huh.
And then conditioning. There was an awareness of that, and then conditioning, jumping up to be the one who was aware.
Uh-huh.
But all of that was happening in awareness.
In awareness. Uh-huh.
It's just so interesting. I just had not seen quite so clearly that level, that next level of conditioning pretending to be awareness.
Yes. Conditioning pretending to be awareness, because it's sort of the process of personalizing the awareness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's an interesting teaching. I think there's a Buddhist teaching which says that there are three stages of the mind: the recording facility, then that which discriminates, the perception of what it is that's being recorded, and the ego sense that owns the experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then that within awareness we can watch those things, the mind function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just as the eyes see, the mind has a set of functional components, and we're watching that.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it was neat to not be fooled.
It was neat not to be fooled, uh-huh.
Yeah. And just the one other thing was, I was also watching how the absorption of energy that was taking place,
uh-huh.
And it was trying to take place from conditioning, and the kind of process it was engaging in was that was creating a kind of sourness or discontent, mm-hmm. And really connecting that with the precept of not to lead a harmful life.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like I was seeing the harm in a way I hadn't seen the harm.
Uh-huh. So the observation of how there was an energy movement towards discontent or dissatisfaction,
mm-hmm.
And that going with it is related to causing harm to the being. Because if to connect it back to that structure, it's giving fuel to the groove that gets deepened,
mm-hmm.
Or starving the groove. So
right.
if we don't go with it, the structure doesn't get built up so solidly as it would have before.
So seeing is that anything other than being present is actually harmful.
Anything other than being present is actually harmful.
And then watching self-hate come in to want to make me at fault for
uh-huh.
the harm, but not going there.
Not going there, yeah. Thank you. So Scott, keep going this way.
I've been looking at, yesterday Sherry was wearing a t-shirt that said something to the effect of, I don't want to tiptoe through life only to arrive safely at death.
Yeah. What a cool t-shirt.
Yeah, well, I was really noticing how that occurs. That process occurs a lot.
Process of tiptoeing through life?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's kind of interesting. So, you know, I made this huge commitment to come to live at the monastery, and I sense that there is somebody, you know, the authentic part of me who is here wholeheartedly,
uh-huh.
Yet I just see a lot of of that tiptoeing, you know, not wanting to get in trouble, wanting to kind of keep things safe. Even like Sundays when I first got here were kind of overwhelming, and now I really actually look forward to them because we have a lot of time. There's more time to choose what you want to do. And but I realized kind of what's happened is now I have some sort of routines,
uh-huh.
in the Sunday, and I don't know if it's really, if I'm any more open to life necessarily,
uh-huh.
than I was when I was uncomfortable. I feel more comfortable.
Uh-huh. Well, it's an interesting place to look. I think it's related to the conversation we were having with Penny a couple of minutes ago, which is that to watch for how ego constructs structures.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, that open sense of aliveness, that wholehearted sense of participation, gets silted over by the ego. The image that comes to me is a river, right? The river flows, but as it flows, it creates the waves that cause the sand to silt and choke the river.
Yeah.
And you need to have a storm or a snow melt to wash away the silt.
Yeah.
And that we're also in that process of constantly being vigilant to know when we're being silted over. Right? Mm-hmm. And to invite that sense of that change is why, that's probably why ego resists change so much, because mm-hmm. it's those moments of transitions which are the snow melts. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm ready for a snow melt. It just feels like it's weird. It's that thing where conditioning is just trying to get through something. Uh-huh. Get me. It's going to be a challenge to get through the amount of time I've committed to being here, but it's trying.
Yes.
You know, it's like week after week. It's like, well, how? Basically, how can we just sort of, you know, get more comfortable and expand our awareness and then stay neat.
And stay, yes, 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 it's always angling to assert itself in some way. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's almost like the image that came up for me this morning was there's just like a life like radiating all around me, and then it's like there was this image of this guy, he's got a hood on, and he's kind of like, he's trying to sneak through.
You know, hide out.
He's trying to hide out, and but he's you know, but I know that's not actually me. I mean, that's really conditioning, trying to hide out in an environment where light is being shined all over the place.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then I can feel this, like, oh, I don't want to identify with that. Like, it feels yucky. It's a waste of time. It feels small. Yet that compulsion to say, no, I want to.
Uh-huh.
You know, I want to be that, and I want to be that more.
Uh-huh.
And then it starts just leading me to this thing about this other process of like, what is it to just be?
Uh-huh. So the inquiry around, if there is no compulsion to the identification, then what would it be simply to be wholeheartedly alive in the moment?
Yeah, so I realized I don't spend a lot of time doing that. Even like meditation and recording and listening and things, really, really great avenues like that can become about doing,
uh-huh.
trying to get somewhere. And at the end of a retreat recently, the guide said to me, you know, hey, go take a break and put your feet up. And I was like, what? You know, monks don't put their feet up. Like, that's, uh-huh. you know, so then it kept coming up, you know.
Yeah.
So the other day I was like in my hermitage, and even at night I can feel that, like, trying to structure the time and whatnot. And I'm like, I'm going to just put my feet up,
uh-huh.
you know, but be here, you know. And I set an alarm in case I got, like, way off or something like that. And I was like, well, that's kind of nice.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I can actually like sit on my bed or lay on my bed, and it's not a direct route to karmic conditioning.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So I'm hearing this, and see if this is what you're projecting, that the compulsion to do, it's like karma, right? Karma is action. It's trying to manifest all the structures that maintain the ego. And so we are conditioned to believe that if, in the absence of that, then we would be people who lay, you know, lotus eaters, who lay around doing nothing and not being productive.
Yeah.
And I think what you're watching is, how is it possible to just be wholeheartedly in life and represent life's movement,
yeah.
instead of watching for the ego structure constantly being on the edge of, well, is it the ego trying to manifest itself or what? And to me, the interesting part of it is that the space allows for that process to happen. At some level, there's the life is awakening, and life is waking up without the ego being involved with it. And then we just, at some level, trust that we'll receive the information as you're receiving it now, to know, okay, this is another avenue that I need to be looking at, and life sort of, the guy tells you to put your feet up. Life tells you to put your feet up. You feel uncomfortable about structures and unstructured times. And so it feels like that intelligence is waking up to another place of exploration.
Well, that's what's funny, is I know that there's a waking up and a transformation going on constantly. Uh-huh. I'm in that silt, that cloudiness that you talk about, that I don't know who or what I am, you know, without this being mirrored back or getting this feedback, if I'm doing a good job or a bad, you know, all that stuff. And so last night, that column, maybe following that life, it was like, okay, it was the end of the day, what else? It was like, oh, you know, put out the bad lights, and then I went to go get those, and then they came in, oh, don't forget, you know, get your towel. Uh-huh. And I went and got my towel, and then it just occurred to, like, sit down, and then there's a bench right where we hang up our towels. And I look up, and there's all these stars, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love looking at the stars, and even though they're available to me almost every night that I've been here, mm-hmm. I rarely look at them. And it's always this process of like, well, I don't really want to stand out and be food for the mountain lion. You know? or there's just a lot of like self-consciousness. Like I'll look up and feel like an overwhelm, uh-huh. you know, like almost an intimidation at times. But it was like a super safe area, you know, where I was, and it was dark and I could see. And so I was like, oh, this is the putting the feet up again.
Uh-huh.
You know, uh-huh. and I was like, I'm going to do this for 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, man, this is great. So I recorded afterwards about like how the stars and I are alike.
Uh-huh.
And it was really fun. It was just like, you know, we're both shining, you know, we're both alive, you know, we're both a part of something larger.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wow, I want to do more of this being business.
And then the silk starts to form, right? Because the being gets converted into the doing. Uh-huh. And the structures start to create. I mean, that it was such an unselfconscious,
yeah.
wholehearted presence. And then there's that spontaneous enthusiasm and intention to be more wholehearted, mm-hmm. and then to watch that little thing come in to say, okay, let's structure 10 minutes under the stars every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, it's funny because then it came up, I want to do 100 days of being with the stars. but there was a little bit of noticing of that, but it was like, yeah, but that would be great.
Yes. And really what I think you're pointing at, Scott, is the other movement that we navigate is the enthusiasm of wanting to be with the stars is to be in the enthusiasm.
Yeah,
and conditioning wants to confuse that with, oh, it's the structure, mm-hmm. and you're going into the structure mm-hmm. of doing again. Mm-hmm. But if we can have the structure as a support to point us to the place
yes.
we want to be,
yes.
then that's very helpful.
It's the reminder, I want to live in enthusiasm.
Right.
And this is a place that supports that process.
That's right.
And of course, you could look at the stars and not be, but it's challenging.
But there's that intention, and then yeah. there is that coming back to that experience, and instead of it being silt, it could be just the reverse flow,
yeah.
right?
And the last thing, as you were talking, I was hearing is, I don't need to be controlled.
Yeah.
You know, that's what that was coming out of there.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like the tiptoeing is, I need to be controlled. And be, you know, to be safe, because otherwise I don't know
yeah.
what I'll do. And it's like life is friendly,
yeah.
and life is living through me, and I can just kind of follow that. I don't need a structure or you're going to do something bad and do what. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's just so amazing how powerful that is, but
yes.
how ridiculous it seems at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it points to what ego does all the time. It mm-hmm. is a mechanism of controlling the human.
Exactly.
And we wake up mm-hmm. to maybe we don't need.
Yeah,
because part of the reason we accept it is perhaps it goes to that place, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And therefore, if in order for me to be good, I need to have something watching over me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wake up to the fact that we're... The most harm we do is waste 10 minutes looking at the stars, then it's not as believable.
Thank you.
So, Tracy.
So I've been looking at what comes up in working meditation.
What comes up in working meditation?
And then how you do anything is how you do everything
mm-hmm.
has really been revealing itself in working meditation. And I've been seeing how quickly the person is abandoned when there's a task.
Uh-huh.
And how quickly conditioning wants to drive in and identify with the content.
So let me see if I'm right. So the person is abandoned, the focus becomes on the task.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the last thing you said?
Conditioning drives in and runs some very old tapes about worth of the person mm-hmm. is associated with the content mm-hmm. of the task.
Uh-huh. How well you've done the task, or in other words, the worth, the value is based on performance.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I mean, that is like a huge, that's a huge, there are many sub-personalities that, uh-huh. for which that is the theme.
Uh-huh.
That the worth of the person is what you're doing, how well you're doing it, how other people respond
mm-hmm.
to what
mm-hmm.
you're doing. There's a whole structure,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole huge system there.
Yes. That approval and love are conditional.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the abandonment, right? Instead of being with the person
yes.
who is perfect and lovable and just perfect as they are,
yes.
there's the movement from that authenticity to the belief that only us, that value for service, some kind of an exchange,
yes.
and the receipt of the approval of that
mm-hmm.
is what is the worth of the person.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the approval can, conditioning has another system
uh-huh.
that runs the approval process.
Of course.
The evaluation,
right.
the commentary,
yes. yeah.
Simultaneously. It doesn't have to be external. It's
yes.
just,
uh-huh.
there's all this internal conversation.
And I would project that even if the external came in with absolute accolades, that system is going to ensure that that is never received
yeah.
because otherwise the abandonment won't happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I've been watching how the abandonment happens.
Uh-huh.
And the breath is the core, it's
mm-hmm.
the center, is for me, you know, it's the thing we go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've noticed is that when I have a task and I'm bringing my full attention and wholehearted intention to that task, it's like the activity itself, that the conditioning system is so powerful that I start holding my breath.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so I abandon the person
uh-huh.
by shortening the breath,
uh-huh.
holding the breath,
uh-huh.
and then conditioning takes over.
Almost like a physical starvation of the being.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That what nourishes and animates the being is withheld.
Yeah.
And that's a signal to
yeah.
how much the mind has taken over
yes.
and how much there's no presence in the body.
Sometimes I actually, it's like I almost find myself
uh-huh.
I'm almost hyperventilating.
Uh-huh.
The breath is moved from the deep belly breath that relaxes, that lets go. To this sort of hyperventilation
uh-huh.
that's up in the neck
uh-huh.
area. And I've been seeing that a lot.
Uh-huh. Well, that's so powerful to see, right? That this kind of space and this kind of focus and the willingness to be present enough to that level of attention, to be able to watch all of that and that know that it's a signal to
mm-hmm.
to sort of short circuit that process of abandonment, that you could take the breath, you could take the full breath as soon as you know you're holding it, and then drop back into letting the person and life and the being be there
mm-hmm.
wholeheartedly, instead of moving into that sort of wholehearted attention on the task.
Yeah.
Some way of expanding the awareness, actually.
Yes. Yeah. I'm getting a really, really strong sense of how powerful.
Yeah.
Those conditionings, that conditioning structure, system, and how many layers there are
yeah.
to it. It is a formidable foe.
It is a formidable foe. And yet we have those moments of insight.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as we have it, that sense of relief, that sense of freedom,
yes.
that there is, that we sort of got the exit ramp to the structure,
yes.
that we can keep practicing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. It only takes a moment of the awareness to... That we don't need to believe the ego conversation, that just because it's such an enormous structure that it takes that enormous effort to let it go. But that moment of, oops, that moment of awareness
yes.
can assist us to come back to just being here.
And that theme that's been in the ethers, that it's not the content
uh-huh.
is irrelevant.
Yes.
That
uh-huh.
the content is completely irrelevant has been really helpful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because those structures, you know, if it doesn't work one way, then well, let's try this other one. So that content is irrelevant. And the deep breathing is the place to come back to. That has been very helpful in moment. I mean, it really is moment by moment.
Well, it's something Sherry said recently. She said there's only one process we have to overcome, and that's egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Mm-hmm. But it wants us to believe that there's 1,000 content that we have to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is what drives the overwhelm. But if we know that the only process we have to do is to come here, and here solves it, the solution, there's only one process solution and there's only one process problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It simplifies it. It really is simple.
It does. Well, it's the breath. I just come back into the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Karen.
I think that I am watching a structure come down.
Ooh.
And
intense moments can
be. It's very intense. It mm-hmm. feels like there's a grasping and clinging and then there's falling, but it's not a dive.
Uh-huh.
At all. And I'd like to turn it into a dive.
Uh-huh.
And
do you mean that to just let go into the process of the crumbling?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm. Sort of inevitably, it seems, at least it's my experience, that life puts the pressure on till you get there.
Mm.
Right? That the moment of the ultimate crumble is when you fall off the abyss.
Yeah.
So you can't cling anymore.
Well, I feel like I keep going into that and I'm like,
uh-huh.
no!
Uh-huh.
Find my way out and then
mm-hmm.
in,
yeah.
and then out. And I want to run this by too. There's a lot of grief in it.
Uh-huh.
Does that seem like that's something that would go with that? Or is that something that's other?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it feels like to me because, how would I say it? I mean, that I can see, well, I'll just say this. I'm not who I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But it's actually from a more disidentified place. She isn't who she thought she was.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know where she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, try this on for size counter because I don't know. There is, to me, my experience when cells disintegrate.
Yeah.
is that there's a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, that's what it feels like, right, when the self disintegrates, right? That there's something, it's like my experience of it is there's a crust that breaks through, right? There's a disintegration
yeah.
and something from inside that's been banked wells forth. Or oftentimes, the welling forth is what disintegrates the crust.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? It could be all of that. I don't know. But there's the experience that I've also had of selves disintegrating. Right? That one, when they're not all independent. Like there are identities that depend on each other. So
yeah.
this identity that is disintegrating. Is grieved for by another identity. It's not necessary that it's authenticity because the center or authenticity is just embracing everything that's going on without any sense of loss. But that doesn't mean that the experience, the feelings that we have and the interpretations of it and what feels real isn't whatever labels are there. Right, because there's intense sensations
yeah.
and a lack of clarity on how to label it or how to experience that we just feel it all.
Yeah.
And then there's that process that tries to go, well, is that authentic? Is that life? Is there loss? Is there grief? It's just a lot of, it's like karma burning up, and karma burning up has anger and grief and betrayal and all kinds of labels to the sensations that we hold.
Okay.
At least that's my experience.
Yeah. And with it, kind of a whole world goes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
The whole view of how she thought things were, her, mm-hmm. you know, sort of her, sort of where she thought she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess what I want to check in about is that, you know, there's somebody who wants to go, is this normal, you know?
Yeah.
Is this how you go through this, you know, like, is there any guideposts or, you know?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, and, you know, that I think would be the perfect place to pick up the recorder,
yeah,
right? Because the guidepost is the mentor.
Yeah.
And that sense of reassurance that whatever's going on is just simply what's going on, and that it doesn't have to be right or wrong,
yeah,
or acceptable or not acceptable, or any of those things, that we embrace everything that's going on for this being in unconditional love and acceptance.
Okay, and there's a movement in and out of it. I mean, there's times that there's no... It's perfectly fine.
It is perfect.
And then somehow, I keep getting drawn back in, or she does.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this turmoil, and...
Yeah. It is called the Way of Transformation, right, Karen?
Okay.
If nothing else, go read it at the end of group.
Yeah. Okay.
That it is that process.
Yeah,
it's
haven't had one of these in a while.
Yeah. I think we could get a show of hands that every time we come up against karma that we transcend, it's one of the most painful places. It's a dark night of the soul. It's a burning away. However we want to describe it. And I think the only place we keep coming back to is, it's not that it gets any easier, but it does get to be a familiar process.
Okay.
So we don't go into, I need to fix this because something is going on that needs to be different. It's okay, well, this is all the process of waking up and letting go of suffering.
Yeah.
And I just have to find the signposts are, oh, it's a familiar process.
It is.
I get to the recorder?
Yeah,
or can I get to whatever it is that assists me in being with it?
Yeah.
Not fixing it, not avoiding it, but being with it. Because the narrative that's not available to us is the life process that's wearing away, right? What we experience is the ego's wanting to cling.
Yeah.
But if life was standing outside and telling the story would be of the karma burning away,
yeah,
not what the karma feels when it's burning away.
Mm-hmm.
And we experience both inside of us, right, in this container,
yeah,
in, mm-hmm, so, in terms of the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of the difficulty is that it was a really beautiful story that she had going.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that way. It's just, it wasn't a real story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's, she didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit like getting shot out of a cannon, is what it feels like. And it came on abruptly without any warning or without any, it just, you know, and then I think, okay, well, it's here because it's ready to be held and healed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, I don't know this, and maybe this is the discussion to talk to the mentor about, right? Which is, what is there? What is her sense of disappointment and betrayal? What's really going on for her? And what did she get out of the story? Can we give her that anyway?
Mm-hmm.
That it's not dependent upon what the story is.
Yeah.
Right? Because somehow or the other I would project, I don't know, but whatever it was that the story gave her made her feel a certain way. It's not the story that was beautiful, but who she was, she is, and she needs to perhaps recognize that. But that's sort of the process you could work with the mentor to see what's really going on. And in that process, you're just being with whatever is going on.
Yeah.
Whoever is involved, whether it's an authentic aspect of the personality that needs to be tended to, or an identity that's trying to reassert itself by using that person. Whatever it is, you'll get to see as you as you work with a mentor on this, right? Everything. Yeah. Talk about all of what's going on and the clarity that life is trying to assert through the process, what you are transcending, will get back, you'll get back into touch with.
Okay, well, that's helpful. Thank you.
Because it's never about the content, it's always about the process, yeah. And we think it's about something, but it's not, because what we get to see is something completely
it's
different.
It's very clear, because I got to see the whole world that was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, what does it feel like? It's kind of like, I don't know, it doesn't matter, but I think that's good. I think you've given me a lot to work with, and I think I can leave it there.
Yeah. The one little thing that dropped in, right, Karen? It's hard for whoever's there right now to probably accept the possibility that that had to be let go of, right? Because the view of ego is, this is it. There's nothing beyond this context. But what life always offers when the limits of ego crumbles is everything. Mm-hmm. And if we are not in that limited place of not that person or whatever the ego structure is, then the view we have is all of what we have and what becomes available to us. So, example being, if I'm inside of a marriage that I want to leave, part of what I hear is I'll never have another relationship, mm-hmm. so I might as well stay in this one. Mm-hmm. It never occurs to me that I might be able to find the love of my life outside of the relationship. But I have to let go of the relationship, all of the attention and energy that's spent in maintaining this mm-hmm. thing, that has to disintegrate for all the energy to be available for the love of my life to be discovered. But within it, while fighting to try to overcome it, the possibility of something other than this is never available, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Wow, lots of hands.
It follows along a lot of what's come up already, which is
good.
Whole mind. What I've been looking at over the last couple of days is the change in the structure at the monasteries for the visiting uh-huh. monks, especially around guidance.
Uh-huh.
Because conditioning came up with this whole reasoning that why Beth isn't getting guidance
uh-huh.
is because in June, when I was offered such wonderful, supportive guidance to go home and really follow my heart,
uh-huh.
yeah, you didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
So we're cutting you off. Uh-huh. you don't get any more now. Mm-hmm. and I know, authentic Beth knows. I mean, obviously that's not true. What a coincidence. It's almost like life is going, okay, how else is that available to you?
Mm-hmm.
So what really showed up, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, was a sense of how much ego wanted guidance, one-on-one guidance, to know that it's doing it right.
Uh-huh.
To know it's the right person.
To get reflected.
To uh-huh. just, you know, bask in this.
Being able to tell its story.
Yeah, you know. Look at this. And aren't uh-huh. I funny? And aren't I, you know.
Making progress.
Yeah. Look, I'm burning up karma. Right. And how much that was just such an ego process of coming. Of that's what wanted it.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe.
Yes, at the risk of, you know, never having guidance again.
Well, all I say about that is it's easy to be the Monday. Sunday morning quarterback, right?
Sure.
It's already
sure,
set
absolutely.
Up that ego was the one that wanted it, and so
right.
that any authentic person who showed up in all of those guidance appointments
right.
never showed up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, no, actually, say more.
Oh, just that now the story is that ego wants the guidance.
Oh, as opposed to the authentic being who showed up and really
got the guidance, acted on it, worked with it. Yeah, see? Possibility.
Kind of. Yeah. sure, whatever. look at ego just going, yeah, I don't know what you're saying. yes, there is that. And what also dropped in then setting up my own guidance sessions on the recorder of, you know, okay, what are you looking at? And then, I mean, I don't even switch the recorder to hands anymore. I just look one way and then I look the other. And it's amazing. What I found that what comes out of the mentor's mouth in doing that, I mean, some of the questions I've been asked
mm-hmm.
are like getting to the, you know, like cutting through everything, because the mentor really has inside information.
Yes.
Because it's been through all of the life process that this being is going through, as opposed to somebody from the outside who, you know, yes, we are all going through very similar karmic processes and we can relate to each other in a sense of, yes, I've been through the loss of a relationship, or yes, I've tried to dissolve a relationship, or yes, I have dissolved it, or whatever. Or I've been in a place of, you know, wanting to be the right person, or, you know, whatever it is. That the mentor has this, has all the details.
Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, just like karmic conditioning is completely constructed for the karma of this being, the mentor
right.
has all the inside dope also.
Has the inside dope. You know, to really not let karma
get
or conditioning get away with it.
It's why it's that recording and listening is so powerful, right? Because
the
wisdom that you access is directly relevant to the being that is being assisted.
Yeah, and how no one, I mean, I guess it's really dry, how no one else, you know, again, like, people can be so helpful from the outside, but no one else can get to it the way the mentor can.
Yes.
And even though conditioning will sometimes take over some of those, you know, sometimes I can listen and go, okay, you know, somebody got overtaken there. But, wow. Just, wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps then there was a reason that Beth didn't get guidance.
Well, and that's the other part that comes up, is really that that deep gratitude. I mean, I just walking into meditation, to just that deep gratitude of that space that is created. And, you know, again, I'm one of those people with empty time goes, oh my God, I gotta fill it with, you know, ego wants to fill it with something, is just to have all that time that goes, I can sit down with listening and, you know, recording and listening. I can sit down with a mentor, I can sit down with guidance, and I watch the resistance come up. No, you know, you could cut your nails. You know, you could wash some socks, it's pretty dusty. You could, you know, and there would be all that until finally the mentor kind of goes, pick up the recorder. Like, it'll come in, pick up the recorder.
And two things drop in, right, Bet? When I meant Bet didn't get guidance, I'm not talking about it in a personal way. Right? Because what the karmic process wants to do is make meaning out of the person. Right? So something at the monastery is working in order to deprive me of guidance. And I don't mean that something at the monastery intuited that Beth doesn't need guidance. Right? It's not any of those things, but there's a sense of divine grace or life unfolding or whatever is going on that ends up being so perfect.
This is exactly what I needed this time. I reflected it before in a guidance session where I said, it's a way of learning how the monastery can be so kind without it being personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the way the monastery gives you exactly what you need without it being, oh, Beth needs this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I'm suggesting is that it's not even the monastery or the monks or the guide or anything, but life, right? If you take that movement that life is the monastery and take the personal out of the monastery, then we get an appreciation that Because life's orchestrating whatever it took to make that decision that guidance didn't happen to be part of these 2 weeks.
Well, and I guess what I think I was leading to was the monastery acting, with life acting through the monastery. Yeah. That's kind of, yeah. Life is acting through the monastery, and how I'm seeing it is the monastery isn't offering guidance, but it's actually life going, hey, you're ready for this. Yes. You're ready to do this next step.
Well, and there's that ability to explore, what does it mean to move into taking responsibility for your practice?
Absolutely.
Right? That opening that up to go, well, that's different. Mm. What is that exploration like? And opening into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Laura.
What I was seeing over these last few days, looking at how I never thought about it in structures before, but I like the picture of it, of used to having the story that not being a part of, you know, the monastery.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was a person who would come to retreats or read a book, but thinking that there was an us and a them.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere along the line, being willing to just reach out and ask something was super scary. It took me kind of a year to do it. And then when I did it, it kind of opened this door to this thing I've been hearing, you know, Sherry talking about, like she just says yes. And that just is perplexing to me, you know, that kind of you just say yes to everything. And so watching how it kept coming up of like something. And the difference of looking at the ego and the I who wanted to do something versus this something that just kept coming up of I just want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so asking. And I keep getting up, yeah, that sounds good. And I keep going, wow, really? And so there's a complexive that comes up of like a little kid who knows where or when, but always got told no, you know, or thought so. And then, like, the person who practices saying, well, we'll see.
Uh-huh.
And if it's a no, we won't take it personal. We'll, you know. But the interesting thing is there hasn't been no. There's been, we'll see, or maybe this, or I don't know. But it's been a yes in some way.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I mean, just been really, so then how it kind of, it seems to me, too, reflecting over like all the times in practice, I imagine like now, like I would be offered something, which I imagine is all of this that's been offered, but I could only take that little nugget, right? And that it, you know, I've been listening to archives back from, you know, when the show started, and I think I'm up to 2005. And one of the things that I so appreciate is the thing that's said is always the same. The message has never changed, you know, which is different than in society and culture, right?
Yes.
What's the newest fad?
Yes.
Right? Practice has never changed. Uh-huh. And I'm sure if we went back farther than that and it was recorded, it would still be the
yes.
Yes. But I could only hear this much.
Uh-huh.
And then seeing this weekend, what showed up was that so clearly being able to see and feel and experience the difference between the woundedness or whoever appeared to be wounded and then the person who's going to go, yeah, no, you're fine, actually, and go over there to be with the mentor. I don't actually even need to spend time with her anymore.
Uh-huh.
And on the walk this morning, I was really looking at, I just started saying life is, and just kind of life is. And one thing that came out was life is healing. And then something that came up was I think there was an imagination of woundedness. There was never a woundedness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There
that's
was
the story, isn't it?
There was a story of woundedness.
Yes.
And then there was a person who was attached to the story of woundedness.
Or
right?
The story of woundedness was attached to the person.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that played out for a lot of years,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the reassurances came in, right, around that. But then even that was still almost solidifying a woundedness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's why we call it wounded self-love reinforces the self.
Yes, yes. And so then what feels like that has is deconstructing is now there's, well, there was never any woundedness, ever.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, right, that we go through that experience of trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing you say is, so there's the practice integrity is the same. Mm. Then we encounter something that resonates with it. And then, so the first encounter is what wants to connect to the integrity or the authenticity. Mm. And then we encounter all the barriers in between and we keep practicing, right? Even though if the ego narrative might be that it's difficult or I'm not getting anywhere or I'm only getting a little mm-hmm. fraction of it, mm-hmm. the process that's happening is the wearing away of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. so the barriers get removed. Yeah. And then one day we wake up and find ourselves in that place you're talking about, yeah. where the structures are not solid anymore.
Yeah.
And that transformation has happened.
Yeah.
And it's really that ever practice of constant devotion leading to ever expanding faith. Mm, yeah. Because as we practice loving kindness and attention, the transformation happens.
Yeah.
And part of that transformation happening is waking up into being aware that the transformation is happening.
Yeah.
Which feeds the desire or the willingness to, not desire, willingness yeah. to stay with the practice because we've tasted what it's like.
Yes. Yeah. And it feels like there used to be such a draw to needing to reassure. Yeah. Like it was a... Mm-hmm. It was a well that couldn't be filled,
yes.
you know? And I was under the illusion that that's really where it was. And then who knows where it happened, but something happened where I'm so tired of that. you know? And then there was this idea, when people talk about the bliss, it's like, yeah, that's great. Man, there's this wounded child, you know? And now it's like, yeah, I mean, to really, I want to stay in
yes.
the life is beautiful and the life is, and if I can just drop the story and come back here.
Yeah.
Like, but you can't just tell, if you couldn't tell that to me in the beginning.
No.
Even when you said it, no. I just looked at you and smiled and went, okay, yeah. you know, pretend I got it. But
well, I think it's only when we get to the other side that we can see the whole process because we have to go through the process yes. in order to see the process.
But I needed you to say it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why the practice message doesn't change.
Yeah,
right?
I wanted it.
Yes,
right?
Yes, there is the seeking and then the yeah. process of having to wear away in order to seek. And it's like we talk about it as escape velocity, right? That within the first couple of times when you're stages, however long that yeah. period lasts, what we're building up is the momentum to exit ego.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we exit ego, then we're in a different place. And then there's another structure that shows up, and then we have to keep building the ego, and then build the escape velocity beyond that. And every time we build more and more awareness and faith in the process,
yeah.
and then the shift in so it's like the portfolio of dissatisfaction to satisfaction mm. shifts around, the ratio of that shifts around. And yeah. we become aware of the process that we're in. Mm. But it takes a while for that to happen.
Yeah.
And it becomes a familiar process, right?
Yeah.
Familiar process of karma burning away.
Yes, and you know, ego really wants to get in there yet, but you're feeling good now, but just wait, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a, okay. and that's again what I kind of, on my walk, was like, okay, because that's what's going to need to happen for me to see whatever I need to see about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot take it personal.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, and that part of the first process is perhaps embracing whoever it was that was wounded, and then recognizing that process was only feeding ego.
Yes.
And then the shift that we're all making in practice is we're not mentoring the child alone. We have to learn how to mentor the practitioner.
Yes.
And stewarding the awareness that grew, that was authentic and got stifled all the way to a grown-up place where yeah. it's willing to step forward and be present.
Yeah.
And is available to be present because all the ego structures around it have been worn away by the practice it's done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Let's see, we have, I think, Claire.
So I'm practicing living a life from well-being and enjoyment.
Practicing living a life of well-being and enjoyment.
Yeah, and being open to life, dropping in information. So it's a radical shift to think of that first and then to carry out the tasks in my life from that place.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And a piece of content is that my job is going to end pretty soon, and so there's activity around like what happens next, and noticing, you know, where my enthusiasm is and exploring that. And my enthusiasm is not to continue doing what I have been doing. And then there's a need for family income.
Yeah.
So I notice there's a place of like kind of like trusting, but the longer it goes on, the me is like the ego eye is like has all these scary stories around this can't go on, and then I keep returning to that place of am I enjoying what am I doing? Am I enjoying looking at this possibility?
So I think what I hear you saying is you're watching that edge of really being open to life and seeing what's arising, right? That razor's edge that wants to reconstruct the belief that well-being and monetary well-being are related. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like it's almost like you, and this would never be a life perspective. Life doesn't test us, right? Right, that this is for me to we're put into a place where we have to choose life.
Right.
Ego
right.
does that. Life right. doesn't do that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and right. it's sort of like an exploration of faith.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of so exciting.
Yes.
Like, okay, I'm just going to really pay attention here. Am I enjoying this? Is this feeling good? And trusting that it's all going to unfold perfectly, but it's all perfect right now. I'm not trying to delay any feelings until this is all resolved, because who knows?
And that just by moment, trying to be here between the tug of fear and the intention to well-being, and just seeing what life might, and that funny place where we know that life has its own timetable.
Indeed.
And we're trying to second guess that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that I'm being laid off, because I don't think I would ever have left that job.
Uh-huh.
And it's so wonderful to be laid off and then to have this whole new way of like exploring what's going to happen next.
Yes.
So I'm very grateful for that. The supportive practice that has brought me to this place of being able to choose a different way for into life.
Uh-huh. That in other words, the pull of, we've been talking about, for ego to create a substitute structure, because the emptiness or lack of structure is a frightening place for ego.
Mm-hmm.
And the impulse to create some kind of structure, any kind of structure, and then to work with that faith of keeping it open and going back to, is this well-being, is this an intention? And then also, because there's that other, I project, in my experience, there's that also, am I missing something that life is telling me to do?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then
when I do notice that, then I return to that, well, life is kind and malevolent, and it's going to come again.
Yes.
If I've missed it once, it's going to, and it's important, it's going to come around again. So.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's all about the process, right, Claire? I think that's what we've sort of come at, which is the desire for an outcome is so there, it's so programmed, and life just wants us to stay in the process of it.
Right. That's where the delight is, just in the process of it unfolding. And there's also a delight in seeing all the other stuff come up and then just coming back to the delight, coming back to the intention.
To the breath. Yeah. To the delight. To the excitement that you want to live in no matter what.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we have 2 minutes, Mickey. Okay.
Very short. I feel like everyone has spoken for me today. But the one piece that I've been particularly looking at since Thursday night is just really seeing that piece of how we do things just so we can see what happens.
Uh-huh.
We don't do them because there's something to do. We do it to see what that brings here and what we get to go through and what is revealed to us in that process.
Yeah.
And the guide has said that all the time, and I just really have been watching it lately after hearing her on Thursday night say, we just say yes, and there were a couple places where I had these things out there Or I was going, well, should I or shouldn't I? And then just saying yes and watch it. So now they're in process that they may end up being no's. But realizing it's not about whether I do that thing or not. It's about what's in it for me to see by saying yes.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's what you're saying yes to. You're not saying yes to, right. The content
right.
of it,
that's
or
right.
the or even the nature of it or the task. Yeah. What you're saying is, yes, I'm open to seeing
right.
what is going to be revealed.
That's
I'm
right.
saying yes to revelation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And from that place, it's really fun because then I'm the person saying yes to the process and watching the process, and then there's the going, then there's the content, but I'm not really,
yes,
I'm not really the content. I'm the awareness. So.
Yes, and if I might reframe it a little, what says, in order to have that level of yes response, the ego can't be there.
That's right.
Right, and what we're experiencing perhaps is how to move to that place of yes from which there is no ego.
Right.
And that's all that's being revealed as a process that we learn.
That's right. And then from that place, I can watch ego do what it does.
That's right.
Because then ego goes, oh, yes. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to maintain myself.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. It's like, okay, well, that's interesting. I see it do that.
Well, and it also builds that faith of adequacy that mm-hmm. no matter what happens, that unconditional love is truly unconditional. Mm-hmm. Right, that we learn the adequacy to be able to be present to whatever arises and what the ego would like us to avoid. And we get to that place of, well, if all it is going to be revealed, then it's being revealed from a place that I can, that I, not I, but we
yeah.
can, that, that awareness can be with it.
Right.
We expand that container.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you.
Well, that's perfect timing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.